You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading, in case I got bored.
Well, hello and welcome to Literary Treks, TFM's local books and comics show. I am but one of your hosts, Casey Pettit, and with me, as he always is the wonderful, the famous Jonathan Cohn. Jonathan, how are you this fine day?
I am great. It has been a month. We are now in the new year, mm-hmm. and we have now read our first Star Trek book of the year. So I'm excited.
Yes, I am too. We're starting a new series this time too, and so we'll see how that goes. We're starting the Gateways series from back, I think, in 2001 was when these started coming out. So
yeah,
looking forward to reading these. But first, let me we got some news, we got some comics to talk about. But let me tell everybody how to get in touch with us. You can find all our shows by going to our website, trek.fm. Follow us on X and Instagram at TrekFM. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. And while you're there, join our listeners-only group, the Babel Conference. Just go to the Facebook search field and type B-A-B-E-L, and it should come right up. We also have a dedicated Goodreads group for Literary Treks. Join us there, and you can see the books we've read and even what's coming up next. And, you know, since I already mentioned that we're talking about the Gateways series, you know that 7 of the coming books are going to be those. If you'd like to support the network, please go to patreon.com/trekfm, where you can select from any number of tiers. I believe that's still true, actually, now that I think about it. I haven't been there in a while, but just go there, and if you are willing and able, we would love your support. And if you have a show that you really enjoy, you can be an associate producer, like myself and Greg Rozier are, for Literary Treks. And lastly, if you could please leave us a star rating and written review wherever you get your podcasts. It's great for us, and it also helps others find the show. Well, Jonathan, we have some excellent news today that I think I found today or yesterday or whatever it was as we record this. Why don't you tell our listeners?
We are so lucky that we decided to record on Wednesday and not Tuesday.
Exactly.
We might have missed it. But we have a new Star Trek novel that was announced. It is titled Identity Crisis, and it is by Greg Cox. It is a TOS book. And it releases November 18th, 2025. And you want me to read the summary?
Yeah, why don't you? Sounds good.
All right. So it says, this all-new Star Trek novel celebrates the 60th anniversary of Star Trek, the original series, continuing the legacy of Captain James T. Kirk and the crew of the USS Enterprise. 2269. The prospect of peace had seemed unattainable until the assistance of the Federation. Finally, countless ancient enemies have stopped their conflicts simply by listening to one another. On the planet Voyager, Captain James T. Kirk and his crew aided the planet to realize peace. 2289. Invited to celebrate 20 years of peace, the crew of the Enterprise A returning to Voyager as honored guests. Security Chief Pavel Chekhov remembers his visit to the planet as a green ensign. He has always believed the negotiations were too easy, and he wondered if there are people on the planet who still long for war and have been waiting for just the right moment to upend the peace. Unfortunately, Chekhov discovers he is right when he finds himself in the middle of a dangerous ploy.
Ooh. Wow. We get an original series book, and it starts Chekhov.
Yeah, that doesn't happen often.
Well, you know, like with Greg Cox, we had Lost to Eternity recently, and that had Savick in it. And so, you know, Pavel Chekhov is not like a minor character by any means, although he was, I think, only in, was he in seasons two and three or just three?
I think two and three.
Yeah. But even still, like, not one of the main characters, but, you know, so it's, right. It's definitely cool to see. Hopefully this is not one of those things where they've put his name all over the place and he gets like a couple chapters and then we'll see. But, very excited for this, for sure. It's always great to get new book news coming out, and then especially with a familiar author. So if we're lucky, and if Greg Cox is available, we'll bring him back to the show and talk to him about this one.
Yes, that means we'll get most likely three Star Trek novels in 2025. We will have in April, we have the Strange New Worlds novel Towards the Night by James Swallow. Then in August, we have the Strange New Worlds novel by David Mack, and I'm blanking on the title of that one.
I think that one's Ring of Fire, if I remember.
Ring of Fire, that's right. Mm-hmm. And then this one coming out in November. So they're spacing them out. They're at least, you know, I'll give them credit. I'll give Simon and Schuster credit. They are not like going like a year and then doing boom, boom, boom or something. Yeah. They're doing like one every 4 months-ish. Yeah. It's respectable.
Yeah.
It's respectable.
I mean, we always want more, but we're going to take what we can
get. We always
want
more. But I'd rather have it spaced out like this so it feels like we're always getting something.
Yes. Yeah. Always having something to look forward to. So, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very cool. And in addition to books, we're always getting new comics. So we got a few to talk about today. None of them are new. We're still kind of catching up, but you know, one of them is the Star Trek 500 one shot, which came out, I mean, it feels like years ago at this point, but I mean, it was back in 2024. You know, it's interesting, I guess, when they do these one shots, it's kind of like the annuals. Like the annuals, I guess, kind of at least tie into the overarching stories that they're going on in the main series that they're doing. Star Trek 500 was kind of an interesting one because there was 7 stories and an essay actually about comic books, and I'll kind of just kind of quickly, I guess, describe each of the stories. It was forever ago that I read them, but I feel like we need to give it its due and talk about it a little bit here. One of them was The Trouble with Tribbles, but it was from a new perspective. I'm not going to tell you what that perspective was so people can go and read it, but if I remember correctly, it was a pretty cute story. Another one was a Strange New Worlds era story with La'an and Sam Kirk. La'an considers her temporal escapades with Jim Kirk, because it's not necessarily the prime Jim Kirk. There's a Discovery era one where Michael Burnham saves a little girl and considers the necessity of emotions. So this is kind of back when she's still in her kind of Vulcan phase of life. There's a very short story of Laddie, who listeners might remember a few years ago or a couple years ago now, reading the Dog of War comics from the Deep Space Nine comics. And it's the story of Laddie gearing up in right field for the rematch baseball game with Solok's baseball team. So Laddie the Corgi Dog is going to be playing baseball with the DS9 team. There's a Lower Deck story with Rutherford and Tendi creating an android, but things go not exactly as you'd expect for Lower Decks. Probably my favorite story of this was Q helping Q Jr. through an existential crisis, and there's some fourth wall breaks for any Deadpool or other fourth wall breaking story fans. So that one,
which is perfect for Q. You yes, know, that's very in line with something Q would do.
And honestly, this particular Q story and with Q Jr. was, and I think we had one earlier in the year too, in like another kind of like special, like one shot or something. This is a good story, even if you just read it just for the Q one. It's just fun. It's just Q and Q Jr. talking and through an existential crisis, like I said. and it's just really fun how they do it, especially with the Q. And then the last comic actually does tie into some of the comics we've been reading. And after the events of Pleroma, which I think we talked about in maybe our last episode that we did, Lore has Data working on recreating the universe in Lore's image. And then it leads us to the next arc of, or an upcoming arc, I guess, of the Star Trek ongoing comic series that we're reading. So, you know, that's kind of that's the one that kind of takes the annual approach here, kind of just giving us a little preview. But and then the last piece that's in it is actually just kind of a fun retrospective essay by novel author and friend of the show, Dayton Ward. Just talking about him growing up as a comic book lover and then, you know, discovering Star Trek comics and a way to honor the Star Trek comics, the history of those comics, and then, you know, the fact that they're continuing today for 500 issues and who knows how many more. So, fun special issue. If anybody wants to go check that one out from last year, it's Star Trek 500. You know, again, these are all just like little one-shot stories, so you don't need a lot of background to really to understand what's going on. And as all comics tend to do, they like there's sometimes a little asterisk in the dialogue to tell you like what issue to go back to read if you know for a reference, which is kind of fun. So that's that one.
And then we also got some Star Trek Defiant issues to talk about. This is issues 17 through 21. It's the Stars of Home, parts 1 through 5. It picks up, I think last time we talked about the comics, we talked about the previous Defiant arc, which was on the ship that had the aliens that they had to kind of cut off and stuff. Yeah. And they it ends with Sela joining forces with her dad, and they start a coup and kidnap the praetor and chairman of the Tal Shiar. It also features Miles O'Brien, who is under scrutiny as a war criminal for his design and construction for the replicating mines during the Dominion War. I personally really liked his discussion and his mm-hmm. flashback stuff.
Yeah.
In this, I thought it was really interesting. And also, he during a Romulan broadcast that Julian sends his way, Miles recognizes Worf, Ro, and B'Elanna from the Defiant. That's how the Defiant stuff ties in disguise as the Romulan kidnappers. And Worf, Ro, and B'Elanna are they start training these people, the Antarans, for battle. Which I also really liked this. They use the weapons from the Hirogen. I literally cheered when I read that because I was like, Hirogen stuff. We never get Hirogen stuff.
Well, and it's kind of funny because we're in the Delta Quadrant, like, and I mean on the fringes of the Delta Quadrant here, but like, it's kind of funny because like I feel like we're always talking about the Alpha Quadrant. We sometimes talk about the Beta Quadrant and we kind of forget that it's like that the Beta Quadrant, like the Earth is like right on the border, I guess, between Alpha and Beta Quadrants, and like the Romulans and the Klingons, they're all in the Beta Quadrant. And then what's on the other side of the Beta Quadrant is the Delta Quadrant, you know? So like, it's really not much of a leap to think that they don't have to go all the way that Voyager did.
Right. So that was really cool. All we need is some Species A472 and all.
I'll go nuts. In the last Star Trek one that we talked about, they're going to fluidic mm-hmm. space, I think. So.
Yeah, they're going to fluidic space. That's right. Yeah. So yeah, we're getting those references. Yeah. I love them. Worf, Ro, and B'Elanna are preparing the Antarans for battle, and Sela ends up trying to use Spock to try to get some information. Miles encounters Julian again, who tells him the Section 31 really wants him to back off, but of course he's actually wants him to kind of go through with it. Spock learns that during the Dominion War, the Romulans tried to use the power of their star to cloak their solar system, and that's what failed and led to a corrupted star. That was an interesting reveal.
Yes.
Which I'm surprised that they would let such a big reveal happen in the comics, but I guess I don't know, like, if they're treating it as the official answer or just this comics version answer.
Well, and I mean, I guess that's the thing. I mean, I guess everything we read or we view, that's their own prime universe or whatever. It's, you know, I think, because we always wondered this even with the novels before Coda, like, you know, we knew they were getting closer and closer to the Romulan star going supernova, but like, then they had to kind of scuttle that series, like, of novels. And so in the comics is kind of now the only place we can actually get in the timeline up to that place. And I think somewhere they said we're like a year out from where like something bad's going to happen to the star. But I thought that was kind of fun because like, we're bringing that in, we're bringing the Kelvin stuff in. Because obviously we got Spock here, and we know Spock in whatever universe we're in has to go away eventually.
Yeah. Right. This is all making me think of, makes me realize one thing I do like about, The Last Best Hope is it does explore the whole Romulan star going supernova stuff and, deals with how they would actually, deal with that situation. Anyway, back to the comic. Yeah. Julian and Miles, continue debating about the past and present, and Worf and his team win the battle. Revo kills the astronomers who have knowledge about the Romulan star, and then he ends up battling with Sela. She, rather than tries to save Romulus, she says that Spock will save it, and seeds power, which was an interesting choice. Worf gets called back to another mission, and he gives the Defiant to Torres, which I guess is that where the series is going? Is Torres going to be in charge for the next arc? Well, I wonder.
Maybe, yeah. I think in the next arc,
have the next comic, but I haven't read it yet.
I haven't either. I think the cover shows... I feel like the cover shows Worf and Alexander together.
Oh, so maybe the next comic will feature them. This won't be on the Defiant.
But yeah. So we'll see. Yeah.
And then Alexander meets Worf on Vulcan, and the Defiant goes back to Kira at DS9. And there was also a really sweet scene with Spock and Worf, where they're talking about him having a new friend, and Spock has a line like, "All my old friends are dead, but not all of them, because you're here. Even if you're a new friend, you're still a friend." Yeah. And it's like, oh, that makes me feel so, like Spock's, because he's so long lived. Like all his human friends just keep dying and dying. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, poor Spock. I'll be your friend.
Yeah. And what's funny too is like, you know, Worf at first blush, Worf and Spock seem like they wouldn't necessarily be friends, but at the same time, Spock, I think, enjoys being friends with people who challenge him, and, you know, especially like McCoy, or, you know, even just with his Romulan reunification work. But for Worf too, he's a very spiritual person, but also I can't think of the word, but just his kind of inner self, I feel like, does seem like a good fit to be with someone like Spock, like friends with somebody like that.
Yeah. Part of me wants to say, Spock, you're in the comics. Just go over to the main line. All your friends are over there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, Scotty's there.
Be like,
there
it's
now.
Okay, Spock. Yeah, Scotty's there. And
yeah.
Other TOS characters.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there was a lot going on in these five issues, you know, like, and it, you know, like we mentioned earlier, like the stuff early on with Miles and him kind of dealing with the stuff from his past was really interesting and something, you know, you don't really think about much, like the repercussions of creating a weapon, like Oppenheimer's name dropped in the comic. And, you know, he felt a lot of guilt about what he created, even though he wasn't the one that built, I mean, I guess he kind of built the bomb, but like he's not the one that dropped it, you know? And
right. Yeah.
But you know, if it wasn't for him, it never would have happened. And so Miles is feeling a lot of that same guilt, and, you know, it's pretty deep, especially for comics, you know, to get into something like that.
Yeah, it was.
But you know, it's always cool to see Miles come in. We had Keiko, and they weren't fighting much. I guess she didn't want him to go, but it was, you know, still was very nice to see them together.
By the way, one of the comics lines, I think, is like Coleco Empire or something. But every time I see it, I think Kiko Empire.
I think so,
so I'm like, is Kiko in charge? Yeah. And does she get an empire in the comics? Yeah.
I do the same thing. I'm like, is that Keiko? What?
So our next one will probably next month ish or maybe after will be we'll read about Lower Decks, the Warp Your Own Way line, which will be issues 1 through 3.
Actually, that's, and then let me correct you real quick. So Warp Your Own Way is actually a standalone. It's kind of like a choose your own adventure comic, from my understanding. I haven't read it yet, but sounds like it might be some fun. And then they actually just recently started a new, like, ongoing line of Lower Decks comics. So that's, okay, like, they'll have issues 1 through 3, and we'll see what's out by the time we get to it as well. You know, if there's further issues to get into. I'm not sure if they're doing arcs or what. I've literally not even looked at them yet, but so it'll be
fun. This will be the first time I'm starting at the beginning,
right,
with
yeah,
a series just for the comics. I've been catching up this whole time.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that, at least. And then after that, we have maybe in a couple of months, we'll do the Star Trek issues 25 and on, and then Defiant issues 22 and on. So we'll keep going with those. And then I'm sure there will be other comics for us to talk about in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll try to get some of the more special, you know, one shots and stuff as they come along. But yeah, we'll kind of keep doing this where we try to get some arcs, you know, so we can see the whole arc. I remember in the past when Matthew and I have talked about the comics, like one issue at a time, it gets tough because like we get one issue and then it's kind of like, okay, what happened before this? And then you get one issue that just by itself maybe isn't so good, and you know, and then it kind of taints how you see the rest of them. And you know, while the Defiant ones that we had this time, they weren't bad necessarily, but it just kind of everything moved so quickly through, you know, Worf and his team training these people on the planet. The battle happens so quickly and they win it, of course. But like, you know, and then even Sela's battle with her father, it just kind of happens, you know, couple frames of the comic and then he's dead and we're moving on. And it just the whole kind of five issues felt like it was kind of almost a kind of an in-between arc, which we've had in other series before too, where you just get this arc that's just kind of, it's not bad, but it's not great. And it seems like it's kind of just trying to wrap something up from before and start something new for the future, but not like it much of its own thing. So I do kind of feel like, and the way it ends, especially kind of, we got Worf and Alexander going somewhere. We got B'Elanna going somewhere else with the Defiant, you know, like, There's kind of parting of ways, but new beginnings, like all this stuff. So it's like definitely kind of how it feels. But yeah, we'll see where all these go in the future, and get some more comics.
I do appreciate doing this format that we've done, where we just do an arc at a time, rather than try to do the catch up or whatever. Because I think this arc format, we start from the beginning of the arc, read till the end of the arc, just that stuff. Doesn't get us super confused with other stuff that's happening. So
yeah, agreed.
I do think that's a good format.
And hopefully listeners like it too, because I mean, especially if you're a comic lover and we talk about one episode and then maybe it's a couple months before, or we talk about one issue and then maybe it's a couple literary tricks later where we're talking about the next issue or something. But
right.
Especially with so many like stories going on in parallel, like the Star Trek, mm-hmm, Defiant, now we've got Lower Decks, and sometimes we get some Strange New Worlds or something, so it's kind of a lot to keep track of.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like doing it this way too. But how about we kind of close the comic books and open a gateway and turn the page and talk about this week?
Sure.
Well, as we've said, we're starting a new series. Well, it's not a new series. It's a new series for the show. It's an old series from back in 2001, the Gateways series, which is starting with an original series novel called One Small Step by Susan Wright. And, I guess, you know, Jonathan, I think you were kind of gearing up to, you kind of picking up all these books and gearing up to read these, right? Like, Did you know anything about going in, or did you just kind of know there was a series out there you hadn't read?
I knew there was the Gateways series, and I knew like the first six were in mass market, and then the seventh book was in hardcover, and I'd been slowly collecting them, and I had like two left to get, and I was like, hey, could we do these on the show? Because I already own them. Yeah. And I believe on the show, the fourth one, the DS9 mm-hmm. one has been reviewed. So we might be kind of covering that one again as a re-review, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
We're going to go through all seven of these. And none of them are particularly long. Mm-hmm. I think some of the longer ones in the middle might get towards like the 300 or 400 page range. But like this one is super short.
Yes.
Super short. It's more like a novella than a full novel. So I was like, hey, this one's, you know, a nice read it in a day, which I did. I gotta be honest, I was a little lost at the beginning because, you know, this book starts in media res.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think it works for the majority of readers, because I think if I had to bet, I think the majority of people who read the Star Trek books are big fans of the original series, because that's what so many people, you know, got into the Star mm-hmm. Trek and stuff. I've watched some of the original series, but it's just not like watching the show is not my jam. Reading the books is generally my jam. But like they just start immediately after an episode and don't even explain, like in newer books they would do. The timeline takes place immediately after this episode and this year in the timeline and stuff. And this one is just boom, straight there, middle of the action with Lysira. And I was like, I feel like I'm supposed to know what's going on. And I didn't. And it took me a long time to like figure it out.
Yeah.
But again, that might be just every other reader might feel fine because they've watched the episode and remember exactly what happened at the end of that episode. I did not.
No. Well, and so it's funny. So I happened to be in Maui when I started reading this one and literally sitting there, I'm like, cool. Okay. I'm gonna start reading this. And I've actually read the Gateways books years and years and years ago. I remember nothing from them. But I do.
That does not bode well.
Well, no. I mean, it's just it was kind of when I was like, I mean, it probably took me a month to read each one of them or something. You know, like I was reading them real slow, and I turned 20, I guess, in 2002. So I mean, I was, you know, in my early 20s, you know, like trying to find my way in life or whatever, but.
I was two.
I do know where we're going with the Gateways. If fans of Star Trek, especially Next Generation, might kind of have an idea where these are going if you've not read these books before. But they will, I think, probably. Not in the next one, but once we get to the Next Generation one, I think it kind of ties everything in. So we're kind of like on the same page as far as like, what are the Gateways? Where do they come from? Who built them? That kind of thing. So I'm sitting there in Maui. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to get into this book and, you know, maybe it'll come back to me as I'm reading it. I get about a paragraph in and I, just like you, I'm like, okay, I feel like I'm supposed to know what's going on here. Like the way it was written, and the way things were describing with like the thick black line or, you know, something like that, you know, like when she's Lysira's like appearing and disappearing. And I was like, that's a really weird way to describe it. And I'm like, you know what? I should look at the timeline of this. And, you know, I look it up and of course I find out that this takes place immediately after, like don't even roll the credits, just keep going. After the episode That Which Survives from season 3 of the original series. So I literally at that point, a paragraph in, stopped it. And I watched the episode on my phone.
That's what I should have done.
and you know, it's a fine, the episode's fine. Just having some of the knowledge of Lysira and the Kalandans and everything would help a little bit, but they're much more fleshed out here in the book and take it a lot farther than anything they did in the show. And actually that was something that was, I feel like you shouldn't have to watch a show in order to, you know, mm-hmm. like in this case, like,
right.
And I think that was their intention with the prologue. The prologue is literally like a novelization of like the last act of the episode. And what's in that prologue, is the speech from Lysira on the screen saying that like, hey, we're this, you know, ancient species, but we caught this like virus or whatever, and so we're all dying and dead, and our ship that was supposed to come hasn't come because they probably died too. And so then for me, it actually, the book then kind of made for a fairly logical follow-on to the episode, because it's like at the end of the episode they're just gonna beam back up to the ship. It's like, whoa, you tell me that that virus is just gone after all this time, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so like having them explore that in the book and having the away team actually catch that virus, to me, it was actually like, okay, that actually makes sense. Like they, and actually has something for them to do, like a mystery to solve that the episode obviously didn't address. And then having some further, you know, like the extra corridors and everything that they're discovering on the planet and everything, I thought that made for a pretty interesting thing. But I do wish that they had put something at the beginning that said, you know, yeah, this takes place immediately after the events of That Which Survives or something, just so that anybody, you know, like, and when this came out in 2001, you know, we didn't have streaming services. Not everyone is going to have all the DVDs or videotapes or whatever of the episodes, but at least, yeah, like you're saying, hardcore fans might be like, okay, I think that was the one. Okay, I remember this one. And then might have some more enjoyment from that part of the story.
You mentioned the virus, and that was actually a really fun part of the book for me, because I loved the scene where they have the cure, the essentially the vaccine for the virus, and they're like, great. And I believe it's, McCoy that was all for, one of them was all for it and was like, all right, let's take it. Let's get it. Inoculate. Boom. We're done. And then one of the other members of the crew was like, we just met these people. Yeah. Are we sure we should just take their word and just inject this stuff into our bodies? Like, do we, like, are we sure? And there's that little doubt
yeah.
that they have in there. And I really liked that, because that, you know, that can play into themes about modern day, with that. So it was just, and it was funny to see that in such an evolved storyline,
yeah.
Here. And so I did appreciate that. And it was interesting seeing, that group come in, that, you know, seemingly had all the answers until they didn't have all the answers. Yeah. And because I wasn't, you know, following the because I didn't watch That Which Survives, I was like, maybe these are characters from the episode. Maybe these are like Kalandans. Like I will go with whatever they say until they tell me otherwise, because I have no memory of anything.
Yeah. Well, and that was, so that was something, and maybe I missed something at the beginning, but with the Petra, these aliens that come in, they're impersonating the Kalandans. And we kind of get a little bit of that at the beginning, where Tasm, who's the captain or the leader or whatever of this mm-hmm. pod of people,
yep.
and Luz or Luz or whatever was one of the other ones mm-hmm. too. There's a whole bunch. I think there's 8 or 10 of them maybe in total, but like I kind of just wonder if that part of the story like made sense, because they part of, you know, from the episode, one thing that happens is that I think it's every time Locira appears or disappears, there's this huge amount of energy that's like emitted from the planet. Mm-hmm. And in the episode, it flings the Enterprise like, you know, 90 whatever .7 right. light years away. You know, and it causes earthquakes on the planet and everything, just tremendous amount of energy. And so the Petra, detect the energy and I feel like maybe I missed something where they kind of then learned about the Kalandans enough to know that they could impersonate them. And mm-hmm. I don't remember them getting the transmission. Maybe they saw the transmission and that was just enough for them. But I'm like, how would that be enough for anybody?
Right.
And I think at one point they alluded to the fact that the Petra have done this before, where they impersonate other species or whatever and come in and, mm-hmm. and try to like, you know, gain some wealth or whatever it is, you know, from this encounter. But I don't know, to me, like that part of the story just felt rushed. And and then I kind of, you know, had to stop and think like, well, maybe they'll show up later. I really don't know if they will or not.
Right.
Like I assume they will in the final book, which is will be short mm-hmm. stories to conclude all of them. But to me, I just feel like if we're going to introduce, like, they're a formidable enemy. And mm-hmm. I just wonder, did we not get much because we're just setting up the Petra to like then maybe get more of them later, or, you know, what's going on here? Because I was just like, I'm left wanting more, but then also being kind of like, I don't know if I even care about these ones.
Right. And also, I think that maybe this wasn't marketed this way. And so maybe people didn't know this going in, but knowing going in that each book is from a separate, you know, show that you're following. And then in the end, the seventh book features all the shows as short stories. It makes me feel like, well, even if we get a solution, it's only going to be, what, a 30-page solution, a 40-page solution? Yeah. if that, because, you know, it's short stories. And it feels like, you know, this should be a big deal because, you know, Kirk's now
gone.
Absent. He's just gone. Yeah. You're going to have to resolve all that in probably 30 or 40 pages, unless he shows up in one of the other novels, which I doubt, because I don't think they were really doing that type of thing. I haven't read it. You've read it, but I doubt that Kirk's going to start showing up in the other novels.
Yeah.
I'm betting he's not only going to show up in the seventh book in the short story collection when it gets to his short story.
Yeah. And I would assume not. And I mean, I'm being completely truthful when I say I don't remember anything except for one thing that will tie them all together. But I don't think that there'll be those kind of crossovers because, yeah, I think you're right. I don't think they did that much at this point in the publication. But also, I feel like when there's time travel involved, we get a little hint of that usually. Like even the not so great books will like talk about some kind of temporal something. And we didn't really get that. Like, I think there was one point where it might have been Tasm or somebody else, or maybe it was one of the other ones, got to the gateway and like called up their planet or whatever, and they're like, great, I'm gonna somehow take the mechanism through the gateway to then be the hero of my planet or whatever. And it made it seem like it was right now, you know, like it's, you know, right. Not, there's like no time to, like, it's just spatial. So I don't know. We'll see, you know, how that ends up turning out.
It did feel in some ways that they were kind of checking a few boxes. Yeah. One of the boxes was, all right, we got to have someone seduce Kirk. We got to have that in there really briefly. And it's just kind of like, oh, she seduced Kirk. Oh, nope, it's done. Yeah. Okay. And it's like, all right, so we got that in there. That's we got funny. That part in yeah. there. We got that for the people that like that.
And he rejected her advances.
And he rejected her advances. Good. Good. I felt there was something off with that at the moment. But then, of course, we have the Klingons. And I love your note that you have here. It says, you got to have some Klingons yeah. to prove how bad the real baddies are. Because the Klingons in here, for one thing, oh, this made me so frustrated. They're not actually there the first time. Yeah. And it's like, oh my goodness, this Klingon fleet's coming out of space. And they're all worried. And I'm like, okay, the story's getting interesting. Yeah. We got a Klingon fleet coming. And then, oh no, it was a projection. They were faking it so that they could, you know, get past them. And I was like, seriously? You promised me Klingons and you don't even have real Klingons.
Yeah.
And then when it makes the promise again, the second time in the story, oh, there's even a bigger fleet of Klingons coming. And I was like, I don't believe you. I don't. Yeah. Fool me once. Right.
Well, but then I think it turns out, I believe that second bigger fleet was actually a real fleet. But instead,
right, it was.
But instead, they're like, yeah, we're just going to get out of here before they show up. And right. then they'll come, they'll find no one there, and then they'll just take off. And it's just like, wow. Neat, you guys.
hey, how dumb are you trying to make the Klingons well, seem yeah. if they're just gonna like come up, oh, there's nobody here, like why'd you come all that way across space if there's nothing there, investigate. Yeah. Anyway, but there's that. But like, this is not the first Star Trek book I've read that's done this. There was a I won't, because it's kind of a spoiler for the book, but I won't mention which particular book, but if you've read the book you will know exactly what I'm talking about. There is a Star Trek book that promises a big Klingon thing, and it's like on the cover, part of the title, it's a big part of the book. And then it's like, oh no, it was all like visions from the planet that was faking everything out. And it was actually just the planet showing them what they wanted to see. Uh-huh. And so everything about it was all fake. And it was like, you put it on the cover, you put it in the title, you marketed the book as being a Klingon showdown with the Enterprise. Yeah. I was like, and you just rug pull.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I felt. Not, it didn't feel as much of a rug pull because this wasn't marketed as such.
Sure.
But as soon as the Klingons were brought on the page, I was like, okay, we're getting... Oh, no.
Well, then that's...
Oh, we're getting them again. Yeah.
That's where I feel like, was this some editor? Was it the author saying, hey, mm-hmm. this is Star Trek. I need to bring in a known bad guy. And this is where I do feel like, because we did have some real Klingons early in the book. And mm-hmm. it was very much... like Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, like the Klingons in that, that show up for no particular reason except to have the Klingons show up, where there's a Klingon who's got no honor or whatever his deal is, and then he finds out mm-hmm. the Enterprise is nearby, like, oh, I'm going to go have a showdown with the Enterprise because then I'll have some honor. And then they get destroyed by the Petra and we don't see them again. And it's just incidental. And I mean, like, the Petra had these quantum torpedoes, which we don't see until, like, mm-hmm. the TNG movies or Deep Space Nine or something like that. So, I mean, mm-hmm. for this time period, that's, like, huge. I mean, it takes, like, nothing to blow up the Klingons. Now, Starfleet crew, the Enterprise crew, knows that, okay, we got, like, these are not, like, these people could destroy us with one shot, and we couldn't even do anything about it. Not knowing that they actually are building individual quantum torpedoes, but yeah, it's just like you couldn't have brought in any other ship, even a Starfleet ship. I feel like having a second Starfleet ship there that they destroyed instead of the Enterprise, I think would have been even more powerful of mm-hmm. a statement, rather than bringing in this Klingon ship that just didn't matter. You know, I'm sure they matter to somebody. They got family too, but you know, like, it's just like I want to say it was like even in like the prologue or something like that, or not the prologue, but like chapter one or chapter two, where we get an entire chapter on this Klingon ship and like learning about all these characters and everything, and like how this one guy has no honor and blah blah blah, and they need to find a battle so that when they die they can go to Stovey, whatever, like. And then we don't hear about them for a while until they show up at the planet and get destroyed.
Right.
So anyway, we probably talked about that way longer than they deserve.
It's kind of like the it's just like, you know, the way you would structure a media tie-in novel today is you would follow exactly what you were talking about, where you would foreshadow the Klingon stuff. You would do something else, make the story more complex. They would put the stuff at the front, and they didn't do that here. And one thing I thought as I was reading the book was, you know, oftentimes when I was reading, you know, the Star Trek books, when I first started reading, I thought this would make good, like a two-parter or something. As I read this book, I thought, you know what, this would make a good single episode. Like, yeah. That's what this felt like was, yeah. It is just, you know, it'd be an interesting single episode of television, because it's that thin, because there's so much of it that's just investigating, that feels like if this was a script, this would be the like a montage, or you just keep going. You would, you know, skip over the investigative bits of this. And so I was like, man, that feels like they kind of stretched it out. Like, they had enough idea for like 100, 150 pages. They're like, it's got to be over 200.
Yeah, I think this, yeah, I agree. I think this would make a good episode, a fine episode, especially like in season three of the original series. And yeah, like some of the stuff, I do feel like they were just pushing the page count. I mean, I think without some of the fluff, you know, this, yeah, wouldn't have gotten to 200 pages, and they needed at least to be 272 or whatever Star Trek books generally clock in at.
I do want to know about the gateways themselves. Like, once they introduced that, I was like, that was enough of a jolt to get me like, okay, how does these work? Why are these there? And why does it conveniently disappear when it does? So I am interested in seeing where they go from here.
I thought it was interesting that they waited so long in the book to get to the gateway. I mean, obviously you can't just like plop it like it's been there the whole time and they just didn't see it or something like that. And obviously they had to like find it and then learn about it and everything. And again, this is book one of a 7-book series. So mm-hmm. this is literally just an introduction to it. So we can't have them discovering too much about it, or else what's there to discover mm-hmm. later. But I thought it was interesting that it was so late in the book.
Getting back into, like, you know, restructuring things we would have, you know, included differently. I would have changed the prologue, and I would have made the prologue some red shirt who was, when the rest of the crew was dealing with Lysira, this red shirt was exploring and got lost. And then the red shirt sees the gateway, and like he's like, Captain, you, and nope, it's not working. And so he just goes into the gateway, and then it like shuts off or something. And that's the prologue. And you're like, all right, you're promised the gateway there. And then you don't get to see it till the, towards the end of the book.
Yeah.
Like that would have worked. But because of this, it's just, you know that it's called gateways.
Yeah.
So you're like, there's gotta be a gateway in there somewhere, yeah. But you wait until like, you know, 130, 140 pages in.
Yeah.
To get to it.
That would have been amazing. Cause I mean, yeah, you just kind of thinking of the literary nature and just keeping our interest through it. You know, again, going back to like hardcore original series fans might have been like, oh, this is cool. Like because we all want to see what happens between scenes or right after the end of an episode or whatever. And this book is doing exactly that. But, you know, was it the best way to do it? Maybe not. Yeah. There was a red shirt because the one that beamed down was Spock.
Right. Yeah.
And, it could have even been him, you know, did that because we already had a person down there. Then it's partly a search for him and then, you know, a search for.
That's why they can't leave. That's why, because otherwise, there's several points where I was like, I mean, yeah, you're interested in the energy from the planet, but you don't have to stay there. There's nothing like forcing you to stay there.
Yeah. And, but, you know, the Petra won it.
Once they got the vaccine, it was like, all right, the cure, whatever it was. All right. Yeah. We can go back to the ship now. We're not tethered to the planet like we were.
Yeah.
Let these guys handle it.
Yeah.
I wonder if we can contact any of the authors and find out about this. I'd be really curious what the process for this was like. Did they, because it says on all the books that it was the Gateways concept by John J. Ordover and Robert Greenberger. Mm-hmm. And John J. Ordover was the editor at the time.
Right.
And Robert Greenberger wrote several books. He wrote one in this series, mm-hmm. and then he wrote several other books for Star Trek. And I'm just curious, did they treat this like a writer's room? Did they treat this like a collab? Like, say, the later the Coda books or the Fall series? Or did they treat this more like they each had their own individual thing that they were doing, and the only people that were connecting them all were the editors? Like, I'm really curious, what kind of a project was this?
Yeah.
And did Susan Wright know what everyone else was doing?
Right.
I'd be curious to find out the answers to that stuff.
I would assume that, that would be really interesting to, talk to one of them, like John J. Ordover, like talk to a former editor plus somebody who came up with a story idea. But I think you can gather by how this story ends on the kind of cliffhanger that it does, how the other ones may end up ending as well.
darn it!
But I would assume that was probably their thing. Like, hey, get it to, like, here's kind of this Gateways idea. And kind of what it needs to be like. And, you know, okay, original series, Susan Wright, you're gonna set the stage for us. So you kind of have a little bit more carte blanche because we only want you to do this little bit, you know, because we don't want you to give away too much. But it needs to end like this, you know, or something like that. Yeah. Like, and then I'd have a feeling, and I think, did Robert Greenberger write the Next Generation one?
He did the Next Gen one.
Yeah.
Because I know that Keith did the DS9 one and Diane Carey did the Challengers one. And then,
Christy Golden, I think, did the.
Christy Golden. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
Peter David did New Frontier. And then they all equally contributed, I think, to the last one.
Yeah.
But whenever I find it in bookstores, I don't know why, it's always shelved under Peter David.
It's not even
shelved under Star Trek. It's always shelved at my local bookstores under Peter David. And I'm like,
oh, that's interesting. Because I'm trying to think like who, I would assume Susan Wright's would be the first story on there.
Yeah.
I want to say too, and that the stories in the seventh book aren't in the same order. I think that they change the order. I think it's still like, you know, original series, then Challenger. But I think from there, and I could be wrong, but I don't think they do go in the same order as the books, because I think that because of the connective nature between them, they'll like have like the final story, like kind of, you know, ties a little bow on everything. You know, one of the things too, I was thinking about this is, yeah, because, and I think, you know, kind of what we're talking about, like, with just how it was written in the story and how little they could really get into the gateways, it just made, for me, the story really small, not small, slow. It was kind of one small step. I don't know, like, which, not actually even sure where that name comes from for the story, but like, because it's, it's a short book, but it's also kind of slow because it, you know, with all the investigating. And yeah, like we're sitting here the whole time wondering, when are the gateways showing up? We get a few moments of action, like you said, with the clay gods, and the rug gets pulled out from under us, and there's kind of a letdown. And, but, you know, I'm kind of chalking that up to it being the first book in the series, having to be the setup. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if this had been done later, like later in the 2000s when the ebooks really started coming out, would they have done... And there is actually an ebook kind of epilogue to this that takes place in the Starfleet Corps of Engineers series, which we could talk about if we want. I don't know how long it is or if it's any good. It's, again, it's been forever since I've read it. But, you know, almost like, so I guess those were starting, like, I think it was like SCE book number 10 or something like that. It was like really early on when they were doing that. But part of me feels like that, ending this with a cliffhanger with Kirk going through the gateway and disappearing and kind of having a little kind of coda to the book of as far as whatever the epilogue that we had in this story was with Spock and everybody kind of taking off because they're like, well, Kirk's gone. There's no reason to stay and the Klingons are coming. So we don't want to have them in the story anymore. So we better get out of here. Mm-hmm. You know, like if it I kind of wish and I get that. You got to have somebody go through the gateway because it's a gateway series. But like, why could we not have done something with the gateway earlier? Have Kirk come back and having some hanging thread of like, well, gee, that was weird. And then later on have a story that's more of an epilogue or a coda or something that, that kind of tags onto a completed story. Cause we have a book here now that we don't have a complete story to.
Right.
That now, once we get through our six mass market paperbacks that were $6.99 at the time or whatever, now we got to go buy a hardcover book for $20-some to finish the story. Like, to me, that just feels like a money grab that, of course, as Star Trek fans, we're all going to do because we want to finish these stories. And it was re-released later in mass market paperback, but like, you know, like a year later, like they normally do. But it's just frustrating because like they could have made them e-books or an e-book or e-novellas or something. Since they were starting to do that more and promote that, I didn't have an ebook reader at the time, so I would have been pretty ticked off there too. But it's just, I don't know, it's a little frustrating having a series that does this.
And especially since it was like when you're first, I get like starting in hardcover and going to mass market, that's totally fine. But when you have all of them in mass market, and then if you want to read the next story, it jumps to hardcover.
Yeah.
That's just that's quite the jump. It's not even like to trade paperback. It jumped from mass market to hardcover, which is just a very interesting choice for them. And of course, the hardcover has prestige to it. And so also doing all the authors together, you know, they still get a little bit, probably a little bit more money with short stories as a hardcover than they would have as a mass market. So I get that from it, but it's also kind of like a really, you know, for your collectors, you see, like I have the mass markets and the hardcover. So it's like on my shelves, if I were to put them in order, you're just going to see that they're them. And then all of a sudden you have this massive
tall book there.
Tall book there that just doesn't, one is not like the other.
Exactly.
Which is just an interesting choice. But you know, I'm interested in seeing, I think one thing that is going to work well with this is not only is it different series that we're going to be following, but it's different authors. Mm-hmm. So what makes this really good is if one of these doesn't work, I have a whole new crew, whole new book, whole new, you know, everything. Whereas if this was a 7-book commitment and we're following the same crew with all 7 books, if it starts out on a dud or something, you're just like, oh no, we gotta read all this. One final thought before I hand it back to you is I was looking on Goodreads, and Goodreads is not always the best barometer for book sales, but you can at least get some interesting information from it. And the traditional series, it starts, your most number of reviews is the first book, and then it decreases as each book goes along. That's the way like every other major franchise or series, whatever, Star Trek or otherwise. With this series, it jumps around. The middle books are the ones, the next gen and DS9 books are the most highly rated, but not highly rated, but like have the most number of ratings. Huh. And then it kind of jumps around the rest on how many there are. And some of them had like really few, and then some of them had quite a lot. And it makes me think, I wonder if there were a lot of people who just decided with this series, they were just going to buy the series. Like, they're a next-gen reader. I'm going to read the next-gen stuff. Or I'm a DS9. I'll just read the DS9 one. And they didn't bother with the others. And I'd be curious how that affected the sales and how wonky. Like, you know, there's a whole lot of book ones out there that never got sold. But there's a whole lot of book sixes that sold or something.
You know, come to think of it, my book one, it was like, I bought it used. Because, well, obviously you're not going to buy it new anymore, but it's a very nice copy, though. That's really interesting. And, you know, I know, I mean, obviously when, I can't remember if it was Dan and Bruce or if it was Matthew and Dan. I've got it in a spreadsheet somewhere of, when we get to the Deep Space Nine book, I'll, you know, we'll mention which episode that you can go back and listen to. Of Literary Treks to hear their thoughts on it, but they were reading the DS9 one as part of their read through of the DS9 relaunch books, and so that was kind of the lens that they were looking through when they reviewed it. And so, like, it'd be interesting for us as we're reading them to read to talk about it through the lens of we're reading through the Gateway series. And so I would assume too that there's people out there, you know, New Frontier was a pretty big series when it came out, and we've actually only covered probably the last three or four books on Literary Treks of the New Frontier series, which is, you know.
And as I'm looking at Goodreads, that had the fewest ratings.
Oh, interesting. Well, and it was the very
first. No, sorry, not New Frontier. Sorry, I was thinking the Challenger.
Oh, Challenger.
New Frontier had a decent number of ratings.
Well, and it was like the first book series that was original. You know, was not based. I mean, we have some familiar characters, obviously, but it also was a very serialized book series itself. And so, kind of like the DS9 relaunch ones, reading the New Frontier Gateways book was the next book in the New Frontier series as you're reading them, like in publication order or whatever. So, like, I would assume a lot of fans of that may have done the same thing where they were like, well, I don't want to read all these New Frontier or these Gateways books, but I want to read the New Frontier book. So, yeah, I'm very curious about that. And, you know, in our next book, the Challenger book, I'm actually really curious about, because, again, I really don't remember anything about it except that it is it's under the heading of Star Trek Challenger, which is the only Star Trek book to carry that one, unless you count Star Trek New Earth Challenger, which Matthew and I covered.
Interesting.
Yeah. Matthew and I went through the New Earth books a year or two ago, I guess now. And so when we get to that one next time, I'll have the episode ready, the episodes ready where we talked about those six New Earth books. But I'm interested to get into the next one because our thoughts on the New Earth books were not fantastic, and not all of them were written by Diane Carey. I think she wrote two of them, and she was one of the ones that created, or her and maybe John J. Ordrover, or no, her and Dean Wesley Smith, I think, came up with the Challenger idea. This was supposed to be the next one after the New Earth series, to feature the Challenger crew. I assume that Kirk and some of them show up too. They were throughout the New Earth ones, but there was intention of doing more Challenger books, but after this one, they did not do any more.
Well, that makes sense because, yeah, as I'm looking, if again, assuming Goodreads is the barometer, the Challenger one has the fewest ratings by far. And, the Voyager one did not get many ratings. The rest are all in the 500 to 700 range, and that's One Small Step has about 500. Doors into Chaos, the next gen one doesn't have a lot either. Demons, Verre, and Darkness, that's the one that has the most, because the DS9 one.
Is that the one? It's got the Andorian Herogen, I think, on the cover.
Herogen.
So yeah, I think that piqued a lot of interest there. So.
Well, and then New Frontier, and then What Lay Beyond has a lot, but I think that's because it pulls in from the beginning.
You buy one book, you want the conclusion you're going to buy that one too. So like, this is like, it's a marketing ploy, but I get it. So, well, yeah, I'm excited to continue going through this series. You know, I think you said it just right. You know, got different series, different authors. We might have a dud in here and there, but there's seven books total. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm curious if we're going to, see more Petra, like I mentioned earlier. I'm also wondering about the Kalandans and if we're going to see any more of them and kind of, learn anything more about like their true nature, their involvement with the gateways, how they got one. If, you know, if we're going to learn any of that stuff, but you know, at the end of the day, reading this book, I ended up giving it a 3 on Goodreads. That's probably a little generous. I didn't, you know, you and I talked before this, you know, like, I don't think either of us hated it, but neither of us loved it either. It's, you know, 2.5 doesn't feel quite, fair either, because it's a decent story, but I think, you know, she's working in the confines of, you know, some kind of directive from the editors, but, yeah. And, what you got, any final thoughts, rating?
Yeah, I would do a 2.5 for a 3. Like on Goodreads, I round it up because they don't do half stars. But yeah, 2.5 seems very it's fine. It's not great. It's not horrible. Like it was coherent. Like a lot of the plot decisions, I was like, okay, I could see why you did all that. Even though I did not like the rug pull, I still understand why it was done.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't, you know, I understand everything. So that's fine. But it was a little weird. But you know, we'll see how the next one is. And that'll be the topic for our next literary treks.
Yeah, so next time we are gonna be talking Star Trek Challenger Gateways number 2, Chainmail by Diane Carey. I think this one's gonna be a little bit longer too. I think it's not terribly long. 300. Yeah,
300 something.
A little bit. So I've already got it kind of queued up in my stack of books to read for next month. And yeah, looking forward to getting into that one. But until then, Jonathan, why don't you tell everybody how they can get in touch with you?
You can follow my YouTube channel at Jonathan Cohn on YouTube. You can follow my Twitter feed at Jonathan Cohn and my Goodreads at Jonathan Cohn.
Wow. Yeah, you could find me pretty much everywhere. I'm on Goodreads and Letterboxd are the best places. I'm not even watching that many movies recently, so really Goodreads is literally where I'm most active. And then I am on X and Instagram and Blue Sky and all those places at Knitting Trekkie. And then you can also find me on Facebook, and I poke around in the Babel Conference and other book groups on there too, so... Yeah, I think that's about it for us today. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And until next time, live long.
And read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number 1.